as the current secretary. I'm from the city of Kentwood. I will be moderating this morning, and joining me we have our panelists. And I'm gonna, if you panelists wouldn't mind introducing yourself, where you're from, and your role, that would be wonderful. We'll start with Randy.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Randy Listerman. I'm from the Village of Pentwater, and I'm current MMTA president, so welcome. Thanks, Lori, for continuing to host these each month. They've been really successful, so.
Thank you. Marie?
I'm Marie Sherry. I'm with the City of Dexter.
Julie?
Hi there. I'm Julie Cray from the City of Davison, and I am the director of the membership committee. And be gentle on us today. This is my first time on the throwing questions out at us. So be nice today.
And Brett.
I am Brett, Charter Township of Comstock, and I'm the director of the Legislative Committee on the MTA board. This is also my first Zoom. No, it's not. I've been on everyone. Unfortunately, there's a lot to talk about in the legislation. So let's do it.
Thank you all so much for participating. It's so wonderful to see everybody, even though we can't actually, you know, hug and be in person, but I'm glad that you're all here to join us. We are going to send out a questionnaire, an email questionnaire afterwards to take attendance. Typically, we'll have you pipe in and tell us, especially if you're on the phone. So please watch from the association managers from the MMTA website afterwards. There's going to be an attendance questionnaire, so we make sure that you get your points towards your certificate. So with that, we'll get started. We have a little under an hour. We will finish at 11:30. We want to be respectful of everybody's time. So if you do have questions, please feel free to put them in the chat. I'm going to kind of monitor the chat. And if there's something that you would like to speak to, I would encourage you to please go ahead and unmute yourself at that time and just let us know that you would like to speak to something. And we'll try to make sure that we get everybody's voices heard. So we're going to start this morning just doing a quick review. I'm going to hand it over to Randy, and she's going to just talk about the listserv that we all use almost every day and many times a day. So Randy, could you talk about the listserv for just a couple minutes?
Sure. The listserv is available for all of our membership, and it is managed currently through MML. So we do have guidelines and a policy online. We want to make sure everybody is aware of the policy, and it's easy to access through the website. If you, for some reason, don't have your login ID and need to set up a new password, you can contact Janelle or Shelley. But I wanted to highlight a couple of items on there. That number 5 asks that you not place political messages, any campaigning, candidate support, defamation, or are prohibited. However, information and discussion regarding a proposed legislation relative to MMTA is allowed and encouraged. And we need to keep in mind that the listserv is designed for information for us to network between our membership. And we want to determine that everything is appropriate, that we post an answer to the entire listserv when we do that. And if it needs to be a response directly to someone, when they respond, their email should be attached with their signature. You can always respond to them personally in an email. So there are several items on there. I'm not going to read the whole policy today, but I want everyone to know that we do take all of our members' concerns about a comment on the listserv seriously. And if someone's post might be offensive to another member, we will remove that post, and you'll get a comment or a personal call from whoever the president is so that you're aware of why that happened. But we just want to make sure that we're using the listserv appropriately. So thanks, everybody, on the listserv policy. And if anyone has any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. So I don't know if we have anybody. Lori's going to monitor the chat. So.
Yep, nothing specific yet. Like I said, if you do have anything you'd like to chat it out, please feel free to unmute yourself and just maybe tell me who you are, because I can't monitor everybody's faces on the screen. But the listserv is a wonderful tool, and I know we all utilize it so much. So, and we want to, as a organization, respect that everybody's going to have different opinions, and that's wonderful. But in our listserv, and we just want to respect that everybody is going to have those different opinions, and we'll keep it professional. So thanks Randy.
You're welcome.
I'm going to kind of jump around on our list here and maybe head over to Marie and have her talk about your online payments and what you do with your fees and how you process those. One of the questions that came out for us was, does any of the local governments absorb online payment processing fees? So I know Marie and Julie can both chat about that, but let's start with Marie.
So we are in the process of switching our online payment vendor. And as part of the process, I looked at whether or not we should absorb some of the fees. In our current situation, we do not absorb. It's all user fee based. And in specifics, I was looking at the new vendor is going to do our ACH, which we currently do in-house, and does have a user fee for it. And I thought, well, we should look into absorbing that fee because it's something that we had previously offered for free. But in running all the numbers, it would end up costing us for just our current customers probably about $5,000 a year. And if you start adding more, and this is just at 95 cents, well, basically $6 a year per customer. So when you start looking at these little fees, they really start adding up in your sewer and water system. So that's why we decided to stay with the user-based fee, even though we get complaints about it. But quite frankly, you don't have to pay by credit card. You know, we accept checks and those are cheaper. And, you know, we have the ACH and that's cheaper. So while I would love to offer it for free to everybody, it's just something for us as a small system that's just not economically capable or feasible. So I just kind of wanted to address that. You know, we're not the, you know, I would like to do it, we just can't, kind of thing.
Nope, that makes perfect sense. Who is the vendor that you're currently looking at?
Invoice Cloud. We're switching to them. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Julie.
We're pretty much the same. We've looked at it several different ways and, you know, it's just, we can't afford to absorb the fees. We're with Point and Pay. We've also, you know, we get complaints, but we do give them this option. Even if they're at the counter, we'll say, if you want to run and go get a check or cash, you know, we'll be happy to, you know, let you do that and come back. You know, especially for taxes, I never really understand why people want to pay 3%, you know, and pay their taxes that way when it's such a big chunk. Mm-hmm. But we just don't have it incorporated into our water and sewer fees to do that. And we always say, you know, how in government you do for one, you got to do for everybody. So it's a convenience. And if we were to absorb that, it's really not fair to the customers who, you know, are paying cash or whatever to increase our fees to cover that.
And I think, too, if there's concerns from the residents. I mean, there is precedent at the state level. If you know, every time I go online and renew my car, you know, my tags, I'm paying a user fee.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
That's a really good point, Marie. That occurred to me the other day where my husband was paying to renew our tags, like you said, at the kiosk. And he made the comment. He's like, I had to pay whatever the percent more was. And I was like, I'll be. It's not just us.
No, it's a convenience fee, and that's what we try to promote. It's convenience to do it that way, and it unfortunately costs some money to do that.
And, you know, one of the things with the whole COVID, I mean, we're trying to encourage people to not come into the office, and it's unfortunate that we can't offer these kind of things for free to them, but it just, you know, I just explain it's just not economically feasible for the system.
Right.
There are some communities, I believe Grand Rapids is one of them, that actually does absorb those fees, but that is something I believe that you do need to do by the will of your commission or your governing body before you can add those in. So, awesome. Well, thank you very much. I was going to jump
over.
Oh, go ahead, Brett.
I was just going to say, it looks like Andrea Boot has a hand raised. I don't know if you see that or not.
Okay, that'd be great, Andrea. Janelle, can you help me with unmuting if it needs to get unmuted?
Okay, I just unmuted myself. I'm sorry, I was typing as you were talking. So what was your question?
Oh, I thought you had a question.
No, I don't have a question. I really had more of a comment because ACH is a contact-free payment option that you can offer at no charge to your customers. And it really is pretty easy to get that set up, especially if you use BSNA. It's we've been using it. You kind of have to overcome a little bit of a hurdle because you know, as the government, people don't want you to reach into their bank account, but it really is one of the safest options to pay rather than checks or cash.
You're talking about for tax as well?
We have not done it for tax only because of the potential turnover. Like for utilities, we clearly do it. Tax, I continue to look at it, but I'm struggling with trying to identify when there is a property transfer, because you know the law states anything voluntarily paid. So if they forget to cancel their ACH and it is considered voluntarily paid, and I really don't think it is in the best public interest to do that. We're too large to monitor every single parcel. I know there's units out there that do it. But yeah, you have to evaluate that for yourself if volume wise you're able to do that.
Just want to address the BSNA, because we do the ACH right now through BSNA. One of the things that I like about moving that out of house, because we're moving that out of house, I have concerns. The city was hit with some fraud, some check-based fraud, bank fraud. Fortunately, you know, our controls are enough that we weren't harmed. But the fact that our account was out there on the dark web gave me some concerns about security of people's banking information in our system. And we do not have in-house IT. So I have concerns now about whether or not our residents' data is safe in our server, if that makes any sense. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And I know everyone's in a different situation, but it just became a concern of mine just because we're on the dark web.
Thank you. Couple of the comments that are coming through the chat is Janine Bates said that they are using Invoice Cloud. They just recently switched and they absorb the EFT and ACH fee only, not the credit and the debit card fees. And they were doing that to give their residents a little bit more options during the COVID. Sue Daughtry, she encourages everybody through Point and Pay to utilize the e-check option, because definitely it's much less expensive. It's $3 to $4 for the transactions. And then Jill Cooper also mentioned that they do the tax ACH. But they do have the residents submit a new form each year. So that is actually, thank you, Jill, for saying that, because that's something that has been in the back of my head as well, as I would like to offer that. But again, I don't want to be managing it from year to year to figure out who's moved and who's not. But if they do fill out a new form each year, that might be something that is a little bit more manageable and a nice perk to offer to the residents.
Lori?
Yes. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike Pettigrew, City of Ann Arbor. You probably all know who I am. Anyway. We use pay connections using the BSNA online website. So we use Chase. And so I don't have to monitor every parcel's ACH information. We basically have it set up so that when you click on the parcel on the BSNA website, it'll take you over to Chase Pay Connections. And each time you make a payment, you have to enter your routing and account number. We do have a number of people who like to pay with credit cards and they pay the 2.5% convenience fee. That's charged directly by Chase. The nice thing about that is we don't have to worry about whether you sell your property or anything, because we make you enter the information every time. We don't store it in BSNA, so our servers are secure. We don't have to worry about a breach. We too, Marie, were just hit in the last 2 weeks with about 15 checks sent around the country with our routing and account number information on them. Luckily, it was Matt Horning's signature and not mine. So it was an older check. But if you don't have positive pay, you're just asking for trouble. So
absolutely.
Every single one of those checks was rejected. So I would strongly encourage you to do that as well. But look into your banks and whether you have an opportunity. BSNA does link to a lot of different online platforms now if you work with them. And I would encourage you to do that. And, you know, we do have people who want to use credit cards. And if they want to pay it, great. Just make sure you have splattered all over your website as many times as possible that you're paying a convenience fee. You're paying every screen on ours. I think you're told 7 times before you click pay, they're going to be charged a convenience fee. And I still have 5 or 6 people who go, you charged me a convenience fee? And unless they're one of the people who, unless it's really large, I don't usually refund them much anymore. I can't, I have the ability to say, oops, this is your first time. I'll give you a get out of jail free card. But that, I think that's the easiest way to maintain that is to do a one-time ACH through the BSNA online site. Yes, Lori.
What was it that you said that you give them a one-time get out of jail free card for?
So through the Pay Connections website, they charged a convenience fee. I have the ability to refund the payment and the convenience fee. And what I do is I do both. I don't give them, I don't keep the payment. I say, you've got to start all over again. So I send them their tax payment back and I send them the refund back. And this is the same day. They have to contact me within 24 hours or I don't do anything for them. I say, it's final. It's settled. I have the money. I can't refund a legitimately paid tax payment. But if it's the same day, like they just clicked accept and I don't know, they had to change their heart, then usually I admonish them, but then I'm nice to them. So
that's very kind. I've never refunded. Okay. Well, good. I think there's a lot of information about everybody's kind of doing it differently. I just saw the city of Newaygo is currently absorbing fees. I see Terry, I'm not sure where Terry's from, but says that they have an FBI case set up also with fraudulent checks. So it sounds like that might be something that's going around right now. Independence Township is using Invoice Cloud for water, sewer, and tax, and then the customer's paying the convenience fees. So everybody's doing it a little bit differently. I guess it's just going to be a matter of how you can utilize your options within your city, your municipality. So thank you, everybody. I'm going to jump over to our education training plan. Since we are doing training right now, this is considered part of our education and things are a little bit different. We're trying to make sure that we can offer as many things as possible in light of everybody being stuck in Zoom world. I'd love for Randy just to kind of chat a little bit about it. So if there are any questions after we get done with this, you can reach out to the association managers, you can reach out to Randy or anyone on the board, and we can help clarify any questions about Fall Institute, Basic, Advanced, Winter, Workshop, anything you have questions about. We just want to make sure that we have all the information out there for you to utilize. So Randy.
Again, good morning, everyone. The associate manager sent out an email to everybody on October 2nd. So if you were signed up for Advanced or Basic Institute, it had a schedule for you as well as the other educational opportunities with dates and times. I'm going to refer some of that to Janelle because I didn't print my document that gave all those dates, but you definitely want to take advantage of all the opportunities that we've developed with the online program. We're, as a board, we're really proud of the committee and how they worked together and then worked with the management team to get move this forward. So Janelle, do you mind speaking on some of the details?
Not at all. In fact, it might be even more convenient for everyone if you were to just go onto the mmta-mi.org website for details, because there's a lot of details. Yes. We're offering about 9 different fall winter education classes online, and many of those are bundled. So if you're signed up for Advanced Institute, you have access to most of them. If you're signed up for the Fall Winter Bundle, you have access to most of those. But you're also able to attend those if you're not part of those programs. Our basic program this year is going to require you to do 5 online classes. And we've been communicating that with everybody who signed up. I would like to reiterate one thing, and that is it's not too late to sign up for any of those things. So even though we've started with this first session today, you can certainly take advantage of those bundle prices and continue to register. If you've got somebody in your office who's ready for the basic education, please make sure that you get them signed up. We are going to be recording all the online education sessions. So if you can't make a particular day or time, don't worry. We're going to be able to allow you to watch those offline at a time of your convenience.
And then if we can just jump in one more thing really quickly, for those of you that are just taking single training opportunities because the bundle doesn't work with your schedule, which we've had a lot of that feedback, there's still time to sign up for next week's October 22nd session. And that's with Eric Scorzoni, which we all know and love, and he does a wonderful job. And Eric will be talking to us on the legislative impacts for treasurers with the CARES Act and cash management challenging issues. So again, you can visit the website and sign up just for that single training session for next week.
Perfect. Thank you, everybody. Yeah, Eric is an amazing presenter, and he's definitely going to be hitting all of those things that are affecting us on a daily basis and are rapidly changing. So I encourage you all to take advantage of that session that's coming up. So, all right. Perfect. So we'll move on to one of the questions that came out, and I don't know if Marianne Cornexel is here this afternoon or this morning, but there was some questions regarding recreational marijuana retail stores in your community. None of us on the panel have had any specific experience with this, but we did want whomever was the person who asked this question to give you a resource of Marianne Cornexel. She is actually from Mount Pleasant, and she would probably be a great resource to contact for any of those questions you might have on that. So I hope that helps a little bit. If you have further questions, please feel free to reach out to one of us, and we can definitely see if we can put you in touch with somebody else as well. Okay, so a next question is regarding delinquent personal property tax issues. This person is experiencing collection issues with a particular company, and they've reached the extent of their knowledge with these matters. So, Julie, you may have some experience that you could help us with in this case.
All right. Well, I mean, kind of a little background of what we do is, you know, once everything for real property is turned over delinquent, we start trying to collect on those delinquent personal property. And we do some reminder letters for a little bit. And we've even tried sending them in bright colored paper. And that seems to get people's attention. And we get some paid that way. A couple of things that I found effective here, we're smaller. So my police chief is really great about making a little visit to the business for me and just kind of says, hey, the treasurer's been trying to get a hold of you. Can you please give them a call? And that seems to work pretty well for that. And another thing that we do is our attorney is really good about also making calls once we've exhausted everything, or sending a letter, certified letter. And that tends to get people's attention. So those are some of the things that we do. They're just hard to collect, unfortunately. And it seems like the ones that the hardest to collect are the ones that are like $10 and something. You know, they forgot to turn in their, you know, exemption form, and then you're running around. But I have one of my employees that she just kind of on a monthly basis does some follow-up for me with the letters, calls, that kind of stuff. So hopefully that helps somebody out there. Get with your attorney. They're a great resource. I mean, you don't always have to go to court just by them making some calls. And most of the attorneys are on, you know, retainer anyways, so it's kind of covered in that fee anyways.
Great. Thank you.
Hi, Ben. We have an auction house that I work with pretty closely, and they're really quite awesome. So sometimes he'll kind of schedule a auction, and he'll put it in his book. So we'll use that we'll use that resource and let the company know, hey, if you don't pay your bill, we're going to start, you know, we're going to proceed with the auction to sell your property. So oftentimes that will often kind of get them an alert and say, well, wait a minute, I better pay. So we've gotten some pretty good collections just by using that resource alone. So, and I haven't had to take them to court on it as well. So, it kind of works on that end. It doesn't work for all companies. It depends on kind of the kind of assets they may carry. So just as a,
especially the ones that are smaller, we always try to say like, hey, you know, when we make a call, like we've got a tax savings for you, and then kind of get them to file that exemption for the next year, so that, you know, we're not chasing them next year, and it'll save them some money too.
Well, and I want to piggyback on you, Julie. That's one of the things that I do, because I would say probably 8 to 10 of my delinquent personal property are the small businesses. So we do something similar to you. I send a reminder notice that's BSNA generated, and then I send a letter, a nice letter, and then I send a meaner letter with a copy of the notice I'm going to put on your door if you don't pay me.
Right.
But a lot of these residents, or a lot of these businesses, if I say to them, I say, look, okay, you got to pay these delinquent taxes, but here, I've got this form for you.
Right.
That's going to exempt you forever, and we'll never have this conversation again.
Exactly.
And that tends to make them more willing to cough up whatever, you know, they owe now. I saw in the chat a question about changes in collection due to COVID. And this is kind of funny because my first letter that I sent out this year was like, I know a pandemic is a terrible time to come to you and say, hey, you got these taxes, but can you please, you know, reach out to me so we can, you know, talk about it. And wouldn't you know, almost all of them paid right away. It's the best response I've ever had.
Wow.
So then I'm thinking, well, how can I incorporate that, you know,
right,
forward? And from a collection perspective, I'm a big fan of small claims. I take people to small claims. Half the time they don't show up, then I turn around and I do a sheriff writ of execution. Sheriff goes out, either gets the money from them at their business, or goes, if I have the bank account, goes to their bank and takes it out of their account, and I'm done.
One of the advantages to having ACH set up in your community is having the bank account information for when you do go to small claims court and win. So that is one advantage to having ACH. And I will also add on with the small claims. A lot of times what we do is fill out the entire small claims court as what we would turn over to the court for the filing date, and send them the copy of that before we actually go to the court. Mm-hmm. So they see, look, we're serious. This is what's the next step is. We're going to file this by this date. So we do use a lot of that, and that does work.
It does. And some of them, the last one I had, he was an attorney and he was just adamant he wasn't going to pay those taxes, and he knew what he was doing. And I sent the sheriff and took it out of his account. I mean, I don't know. People are weird.
That question regarding the increase in delinquent personal property, we have a huge increase in what's owed right now. And I will be honest, I've been very gun shy about pushing it too hard. We've sent out our normal notices, but we're definitely not going our full force like we normally would. It's touchy. And so I feel bad, and I'm trying to just say, look, let's work together, you know, show a good faith effort to even if you can't pay it all, just do something in order so we don't have to take it to the next. So, there was a question regarding a debt collection agency. I'm not sure or a creditor agency, if anybody has utilized either of those options. Okay.
This is I just want to mention real quick about the when they say creditor agency, I'm assuming, you know, like reporting the credit bureaus. With personal property taxes, obviously it's owed by the business and not the individual. So that's the first thing. In general, about credit reporting for any outstanding invoices or bills, utility bills, that's a kind of a, we've always gone against it because once you start reporting, you can never stop. So they basically need to report every billing cycle showing, you know, once you report John Smith as delinquent, then every time after that, you need to report John Smith and their current bill and whether the previous one is still paid and things of that nature. So it becomes a pretty long cycle and they have pretty hefty requirements. So we've never gone that route. Just be careful if you do, because once you start, you can't stop apparently. So
one other thing that we do as well for delinquent personal property tax is that if your community, not every community does this, but if you have a business license that your businesses are required to obtain, we withhold their business license until their taxes are paid in full. So that's one other little trick. Okay, I think we've covered personal property tax well. Let's get real exciting and head over to Brett and talk about legislative issues.
Everything's great. Nothing's going on.
If that were only the case.
So, yeah. So first of all, I'll say, I talked to Judy Allen and she says it's very busy with a lot of stuff and she expects lame duck to be the usual frenzy of different bills. But for this session, I just wanted to touch on a couple that she wanted me to talk about. Number one is the property tax deferral, which is still knocking around the, I believe it's the Senate. Right now, she said there's one bill that remains on the floor, and then another one was introduced, and this it's creating a process for the state to address the some deferral. She didn't give me much more details on that, but the legislature still has interest in doing something with interest deferral. But it doesn't seem to be going anywhere at this point, and it's frankly, it's kind of too late. The other big one is Senate Bill 1108, which amends the Open Meetings Act to allow virtual meetings. She said it's passed the House, concurred by the Senate, and will go to the governor, and she's indicated that she will sign it, and it will take effect immediately. And if you haven't heard, this allows virtual remote meetings to continue until December 31st, 2020 for any reason. And it's retroactive back to March 18th, 2020 to make sure all those meetings were valid that took place. For the calendar year 2021, it will allow any member of the public body to meet electronically due to military service, which is the current law, and it will stay that way. A medical condition, and it's defined as illness, injury, or disability, or other health related condition that prevents them from attending the meeting, so they can't go on vacation and just Zoom from the beach. And then a statewide or local state of emergency or state of disaster declared that would risk the personal health and safety of the public members of the public body. And that's for January 1st to December 31st, 2021. And then January 1st, 2022, it goes back to the current law, which is only active military members may attend remotely. She did want to add that for any meetings next year, January 1st to December 31st, 2021, any member of the public body that attends the meeting remotely will have to disclose, other than military service, will have to disclose their physical location, county, municipality, and state from which they're participating remotely. She did try to have that removed. She was concerned about if someone's medically unable and that they're at a certain hospital, say in Minnesota or Cleveland, they wouldn't want that disclosed, but apparently they were unable to get that removed. So you will have to disclose your physical location. I think that's it. Is any questions on that one? That seems to be the big one right now.
There's a couple of questions. If we could jump back real quick to the property tax deferral, do you have the bill number for that one?
The bill number? No, but I can get it.
Okay. And then a question regarding the open meetings is if your council passed a resolution allowing your member to be excused and attend meetings via electronic means while they're away for the winter. Is that covered in this or is that?
No, I would check with your attorney, but according to the current and amended law, that would not be allowed. It's okay. Only for medical reasons or military duty or state of emergency.
And if I recall, go ahead.
Let me restate that. I would check with your attorney because the law, what they're passing says for any circumstance until the end of this year. So I don't know what any circumstance means, but I would again check with your own attorney or with the MTA or MML attorney.
On Monday with the MML Monday Morning Live, they did mention that with a medical condition, you do have to have proof of it. You can't just say, I have a sore throat. You have to have a doctor's note, basically. Is that correct, Brett?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about what it means that if this, that your meetings could be invalid?
Sure. Well, because the governor's executive order was deemed unconstitutional, it brought into question whether those Zoom meetings that anybody had were, those decisions were valid. That's why the legislature went retroactive to make sure they're all covered. after talking to Catherine Mulhaft at MTA, there is a provision in the statute that says within 60 days, any member of the public can challenge a decision just during normal meetings. And then any bigger decisions that require a public hearing, they have 30 days to challenge. So even if the legislature didn't change the legislation, most of things that happened through late July, early August would be fine anyway. But they did say if no one from the public challenges, then you wouldn't have to do anything. They don't recommend going back and reaffirming those decisions because that can cause more problems. So really the only way they would be invalidated without this legislation is if somebody from the public challenged the decision that it didn't matter, if that makes sense, or didn't mm-hmm. count.
Okay.
Once this passes, it's all moot because it goes back to March 18th.
Okay. So resolutions affirming virtual meetings, those are not, do those oversee what the governor's bill will be or not as of right now or not yet?
If the board passed a resolution affirming decisions made during virtual meetings, yes, if the legislation wouldn't go through, I think that would validate those decisions. But again, I would check with an attorney because there are different interpretations of what it means to negate all those executive orders that happened. But again, once the governor signs this bill, none of that will matter.
So off the cuff question, what about councils that are currently still meeting virtually, even though it's considered right now unconstitutional until the governor? So once the governor signs that, it will be retroactive?
Correct. To March. Okay. To anything that's happened since any virtual meetings that have happened since March 18th, 2020.
Okay. So I'm presuming that many of the municipalities, they may still be meeting virtually, are banking on the fact that it will be their decisions will be retroactively covered.
Correct. Technically, if you ask MTA, they say that you should meet in person until that signature is put on the bill. But again, up to your individual attorney.
Okay. Terry Weingarten mentioned something about the COVID symptoms. What if someone has COVID symptoms but does not yet have a test? She's wondering how that's going to be addressed if a council member or commissioner cannot attend.
I'm not sure that those kind of specifics are in the bill, but I can check with Judy and find out. It just says that it's, I can't remember the language, but a certified medical condition.
Okay.
So doctors know, basically.
And it looks like there's another comment about Berrien County are rescheduling meetings until the new bill is signed. So did you, you may have mentioned already, did you say when the governor was planning to, when this will be hitting her desk?
I have heard Monday.
Monday. Okay. Well, that's good.
And it's not, and once it's signed, there's no waiting period. It's immediate upon signature.
Wonderful. That will eliminate lots of issues. Do you have the bill number for that?
That one is Senate Bill 1108.
Perfect. Okay. All right. Do we have anything else legislatively happening?
There's a lot more things. One more thing I just wanted to mention because it may affect a lot of municipalities is the notary legislation, House Bill 6297, which basically allows notaries to sign electronically, witness and sign electronically. So it's passed the House and it's going to be in the Senate for 5 days before they can act. So it says allow notary to utilize two-way real-time audio-visual technology for notarial acts in certain circumstances. It was allowed under previous executive order, so it would reaffirm that and would go through the end of 2020. So I don't know. There may be some notaries in here. I know a lot of clerks are notaries, so that may affect you.
Okay. All right, good.
And then I'll just say there's plenty more, so check the MTA, MML, and MAC websites.
Okay, but nothing else pressing.
Correct, yeah. Some other things have popped up, like the dark store legislation. There's talks about doing some more with that, but nothing specific. And then there's been no new movement on the ventures exemption. I think the current legislature is going to be hands-off on that and let the new legislature deal with it.
I have heard a lot about dark store this week. Do you have a little bit of information you could touch on that just a little bit?
You mean like background?
No, what the proposed idea is with the locations. I think Senator McGregor has his hands in this one.
Yeah, she didn't give me anything on this list, but I can find out the specifics. I asked her about it and she didn't include it, so it must not be pressing for them at this time. She just said that it's been quiet for a while and now there's rumblings again, whatever that means.
Okay. Would you mind if I touch on a little bit about what they said at the Monday Morning Live?
Sure.
They were mentioning, I think it was Chris Hackbarth was mentioning that there's legislative ideas rumbling about utilizing the empty dark store locations, the retail locations, to be mini distribution centers, if you will, for companies such as Michigan companies such as Myers to be fulfillment operations, such as like an Amazon, to be able to compete with Amazon. So that is what they're proposing, but by proposing that, they're also looking at this as an industrial type of business, and mm-hmm. so personal property tax would obviously negate that. So that's the little bit I know about it, but I found it very interesting, and I know our assessor had chats about it this week with some of the legislators, so it's
sure.
Interesting idea.
Sorry, go ahead.
Nope, I'm fine.
Yeah, I was going to say that the micro-fulfillment centers was on her list. I didn't realize that was related to dark store, but her note is personal property tax, sales and use tax exemptions for businesses that have equipment, micro-fulfillment centers for consumer goods. In other words, portions of their stores that are utilized for filling customer orders for pickup or delivery. So that could be dark store, but it also could be current stores that have a portion of their business they use for pickups. They could be exempt for that particular personal property. So that is, she doesn't say where that's sitting right now, but it's being discussed in one of the committees, I believe.
Perfect. Okay. All right. A lot happening legislatively. We'll see what mm-hmm. happens over the next month. I don't know. There might be something happening, I suspect. Okay. So the Supreme Court decision, we kind of touched on that. Marie, would you mind chatting about the CARES Act? You had some ideas about, you wanted to expand a little bit about the CARES expenditures for the money.
Yeah, and for that, I'm not talking about the police and fire, talking about my cat has decided to join us again, say hi, about the monies that we received in place of state revenue sharing. Because I know there was a flurry of questions about, you know, what can we use this money for? And I submitted, and I'm assuming I haven't heard back that this is wrong, we are doing, like a lot of communities, doing the barriers so that our restaurants can have outdoor seating. And that's the kind of things that we're planning to use or to, you know, use those funds for. And I was just wondering if anybody else had any other like non-police and fire kind of things that they are planning to use their CARES Act money for. And then also, if you weren't on the training yesterday, by the state, they have a system that you have to sign up for and electronically submit the reports, and they extend the deadline, I think, until a week from Monday is when it opens, this portal. So that was the other thing in case people weren't on that call yesterday.
Okay. It looks like Kelly also mentioned that they're using it, the barriers as well, and Zoom meeting costs. I can tell you what we voted upon in our community this week. We are actually going to utilize it for Wi-Fi hotspots throughout our different municipality areas. So parks, a little bit more on our City Hall campus. I think expanding upon where our Parks and Rec Center is, but being able to have Wi-Fi hotspots so that especially kids who are maybe working virtually from home will have other locations that they can go and utilize. So I think that's a really great idea. So I'm excited about that. So, Julie Potts said that they're remodeling part of their office for more security and personal protection. And Alex mentioned that they are using theirs for extended cleaning costs in the village offices. So there are lots of ways to use that money. I have one other question that none of us on the panel really had too much to add to, but one of the questions was regarding how we're handling PTA fees. I can just add a little bit about what we're doing. Our assessor's office obviously will send out the notice that they did not file their PTA in time, and there's the charge. I bill them out through our MR system. And then basically we give them almost a year to pay for it. And if it's not paid for within that year, then we add it to the tax bill. So that's how we handle the PTA fees. Go ahead, Marie.
I did want to point out too, that the community can opt out of that by resolution of the board. You can opt out of charging the fees, which is what we've done, because we just didn't want to deal with it.
Are there any other questions for anyone? Okay. All right. So we will move on. I'm actually going to hand it back over to Randy, if that's okay. Are you there, Randy? I don't see you. Oh, there you are. We've had a lot of conversation on our listserv lately regarding the bylaw amendment. So I wanted to have Randy just go through it a little bit more, give a little bit more explanation and some comments and feedback. And then anyone from the board that maybe was on the bylaw committee could jump on as well and help answer any questions. So, Randy.
Hi, good morning, everybody, again. I first of all wanted to thank the whole MMTA board that this year, as the last year, as we approached our plan of action, we wanted to update the bylaws and especially look at all of the grammar and punctuation corrections and clarify the different positions on the board and clean up some of that. So this document is good not only for someone who will be looking at our organization, but also for our associate members so that they can function without constantly coming back to the board for clarification. So I appreciate the board's work on it, but especially I appreciate Lori, Brett, and Anthony served on the committee with me. And we met with Janelle and Shelley several times to work through the document and then present that to the board. So we had a lot of discussions over every aspect of it. And I think we presented a very clean document. We did have, first of all, the ballots will go out electronically. So some history for anybody that might be a little bit newer. In 2018, under President Barb Fandel, the bylaws were amended to allow electronic voting for an event. The proposed bylaw amendment back then said that the active members have to be notified 15 days prior to the date of balloting. The notice shall state whether the ballot will be by mail or electronic means, and it can be at an annual meeting or a special meeting also. So this year, due to COVID, obviously, we didn't have an annual meeting and we could not hold a special meeting. So that allows us to manage this by electronic means. The bylaws can only be amended by 2/3 of the votes of the ballots cast. So that was approved at the annual conference in 2018, this language. We tested it last year in August of 19 when we did the rate changes for the membership fees, and we did it electronically. So today at 2:00, the ballots will go out to everybody. You've been notified via your email that has listed with the association, letting you know that this was coming on October 2nd, and we'll send the ballots out. But we did make a change in the ballot language based on the comments on the listserv. There was some concerns about the language on the sustaining membership. So we'll list all the other ballot bylaw amendments first, and sustaining membership will be separated. So you'll vote in both categories. Some of the questions on the sustaining membership, the concern was that we might be making a policy change without noticing of members. With the goal of the sustaining membership came through Anthony and some of the other newer members to our board, that they wanted to be able to have MMTA reach out to others that might be interested in our organization and also encourage those that may not have considered public service and what Treasury would be about. So by allowing them to become a member where they could attend a basic institute and learn more, that was one of many goals, and the board looked at all of them. We wanted to give everybody an opportunity to learn about us as well. Some of the comments on the listserv referred to changing, not sustaining membership, but maybe adding another category. So by splitting this vote out, we'll have a voice of the people, the membership, because that's what we want here. We want it to be all of our members' document. And then we can look at the recommendations and comments from those that were members on the listserv. And the board will consider that in upcoming meetings if we need to make additional bylaw amendments. So again, that email will go out today at 2 o'clock, and you have till 10:20 at 5 p.m. to respond. We have used this once before, but Janelle wanted to remind everybody that this is a secure, separate balloting system that we use electronically, and it's user identified. It can't be forwarded to anybody else, so it's a secure way of voting. And that's all I had to say about that. But if Janelle or Shelley had anything to add, or any of the board members that are on today, I certainly welcome if I've missed a point to want to share with the members. So.
Anyone else? Okay.
All right.
I want to thank Randy for looking into this a little bit further and taking the opportunity to make sure that we're listening to our membership, because we represent each of you, and that's our job, is to represent the whole organization. So we appreciate what you're saying, and we take it very seriously. As our committee of bylaws, we definitely were looking at everything and figuring out, you know, what's the purpose of the MMTA, and how can we make this, you know, the best organization possible to bring the talent to our organization. And I think in the grand scheme of things, that's what, you know, that's what we were really thinking about. And I can say for myself personally that, you know, I was on board. I was like, this is a great idea. I love this. But then when you do listen to what everybody's opinions are and what their thoughts are, you know, it helps to hear everybody else's voices too. So I really appreciate leadership of you to be able to make that change so that we can represent each of you throughout the organization. So thank you, Randy. You do a great job. So.
It's not just me. We have a great team and a great association. So, and we are lucky to have our Dovetail Solutions and Janelle and Shelley working behind the scenes, because we, you know, many board members in the past had to do the individual work on their own time, but now we have the support of them as our membership has grown. And with this election coming again, we know we have a lot of retirements happening within our field, and we're going to have a lot of new treasurers out there, and our goal is always to make sure that everybody is well trained to do their position to serve the public that they represent. So does anybody else from the bylaw committee or the board want to speak on anything related to the vote that's going to be sent out today? Or the ballot, I should say.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Well, we have covered actually the majority of all of our questions. There's a few questions that we didn't answer, and the majority of it was just because we didn't have the expertise to answer something for you. I'm going to jump over. It looks like Mike Pettigrew said, great intent. I think it will be even better now to have everybody's input. And then a payroll question from Kim. She said, we haven't had an issue up until now. So if any employee is out because they have to quarantine or they have to take care of a family member with COVID, they need to use their sick or vacation time to get paid, correct? Does anyone have any insight onto that? How that needs to be held or taken care of?
We just gave them holiday pay. Okay. Is how we didn't charge them for sick or vacation. We had one person that had to quarantine.
Okay.
And my understanding, early on, we had one employee that had childcare issues because of his wife was in the medical field. So they were allowed that time off, and you do not withhold federal FICA tax from that. And that was part of the CARE Act from the federal government. So we did do that going through those first few months when people were working remotely, and it happened to be a DPW employee that was needed on the job, but he was given the time off that was needed, and it was not charged against any of his accrued time.
Lori?
Yes.
It's really something they should talk to their city attorney about, because it falls under the Extended Family Medical Leave Act that Randy referenced through the CARES Act. And so it's really detailed as to who has to offer it, who doesn't have to offer it. Mm-hmm. And so I would really recommend that you reach out to your municipal attorney for guidance on that.
Okay.
Great suggestion, Rachel.
Yep. And Tim asked about the FICA taxes being a deferral. So that may be a question you'll want to address with your attorney as well. Brett, did you have something?
I was just going to say, we had an employee that had to quarantine as well. Turned out to be nothing, but we have laptops and we have a phone app. So we just had them work remotely. So really they were working, they were just working from home. They could still answer the phones. They could still help people. So we just we treated it as they were working remotely.
Mike had his hand up. Do you have a comment, Mike, on something that Ann Arbor did related to this?
Thought I had put it down a while ago, but no, we're one of the big municipalities. We've done a lot of COVID policies. If you're exposed, you need to quarantine for 14 days, since most of our staff can do work from home. They do not need to take time off if they are eligible to telework. If they do, they can draw from their sick bank, but we also have the COVID 80 hours of COVID time. So if you are diagnosed, you can take that time off and it doesn't affect any of your banks, based on what Rachel and others have been saying about what we needed to do based on the size of your government. So
definitely municipal specific. So
yep. Talk to an attorney, because they don't make enough money these days.
Well, we are getting to the end. I want to send out a couple reminders here before we sign off. Number one, you're going to receive an attendance questionnaire after this is over. So please be on the lookout for it. Make sure it doesn't end up in your spam. That will be the way that we're tracking to make sure you are getting your points for your session. Our next Treasure to Treasure will be Tuesday, December 1st. So make sure you please join us. And I definitely encourage you, please, when you sign up, send in your questions. That's how we conduct these each month. We want to address exactly what you guys want to talk about and what you want to hear. We develop our panel and buy those questions. So, and then following that, there will be the next one will be Wednesday, January 6th. So definitely sign up for those. We love having everybody here and being able to learn from each other. It's very important for us to stay connected as an organization, even when we can't be in person. And then just one last reminder is the ballots will be coming out this afternoon at 2 p.m. for the bylaws. You have until October 20th at 5 p.m. to vote. It is a very secure site. Please be reassured that you have nothing to worry about when you're voting. It's taken very confidentially. And at that, I want to thank our panel, Marie, Julie, Randy, Brett. Of course, he's my stand next to guy each month. thank you so much, everybody. And we'll see you next month.
Lori, there was a question that just popped up. Someone asked about the session from October 22nd. So
October 22nd. Oh, that is the one that's next week with Eric. What was that one called? It's the legislative, I can't recall the actual name of it. Janelle, do you know the name of that session?
Now you put me on the spot. I can't remember. It is the Eric Scorzone. It's October 22nd. He's going to be talking about the CARES Act. You guys know him. He used to be with the Treasury Department. He's a professor at Michigan State now. He's a great guy, super engaging and incredibly knowledgeable. He'll be talking about
legislative impact.
There you go.
In the meetings each month, I apologize, I didn't mention that, on Tuesday, December 1st, Wednesday, January 6th, they are all at the exact same time at 10:30, so they're 1 hour long. Okay? Thank you, everyone.
Lori.